Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome into Under the Hoodies, Episode 3 on Back Sports Page Radio Network. I'm your host, Mike Pazewski, joined as always each and every single week by Bill Kegel. Bill, I've had an interesting day. I want to get your opinion. I don't know if you're a guy that likes needles or not, and I really don't mind them. But I had a steroid injection in my foot today, had some surgery back in September, thought I was healed. Took the old needle to the foot today, and it hurt like the dickens. Are you a guy that's scared of needles? Because I wasn't until today.
No, not really. I give blood pretty often. So, I'm not a fan. I don't know, outside of a certain subculture of people, I don't think anyone's really a fan of needles. But, there's bad and then there's worse. So what happened? What'd you get?
Well, I mean, I was going to make a comment about giving blood just for the cookie, but, whatever. I've always thought about doing that just for the cookie.
You know what? They cut out the Fig Newtons at the Red Cross there, so I don't know. I don't know if I can go back.
Boycotting the Red Cross because of the lack of Fig Newtons. You heartless.
Yeah, and I'm the only person under the age of 65 that enjoys them, I think.
They're actually pretty tasty, a little dry. You definitely have to have some milk with it, which gets me into another topic I need to pick your brain about, but... I mean, it was pretty painful. Had surgery, like I said, in September. A little something built up, and I got the old injection, and the needle was a good 5 inches long, and it was no bueno, my friend, no bueno. I mean, I got real warm, real lightheaded, but I didn't pass out. I'm a man. I'm tough. I'm 40.
You're 40? I was just about to say that. The guy sounded a lot like Will Ferrell, the guy that wanted that. Who was that? Was that Mike Gundy or somebody? Who was that?
Yeah, Mike Gundy. He doesn't ever disappoint when it comes to sound bites.
He sounds just like Will Ferrell when he was screaming like that.
I bet you Will Ferrell will do a mean Mike Gundy impression.
Oh, for sure.
I'm not a big fan of Will Ferrell, but I bet you he can take a needle, and I bet you he likes Fig Newtons.
Let's hope, because if he likes, if he doesn't like needles and likes Fig Newtons, then I'll officially go back to being a Will Ferrell fan. I just watch Old School, make myself feel better about it.
Old School, definitely one of my favorite movies. We're joined, Bill Kegel, Episode 3, Under the Hoodies on the Blog Talk Radio, Fact Sports Page Radio Network. We're going to get into some NBA talk right now, and Bill, the KD, LeBron, the battle continues. Like the Bloods and the Crips, it just never ends. As of right now, I think KD is obviously the clear-cut MVP, given the absence of Russell Westbrook, but... That doesn't mean LeBron James isn't the best player on the face of the earth, because he is. Many think he's coasting. Well, Durant had to carry the team, and that's what you win MVPs for. You don't get MVPs for coasting, and I don't know. My take is that LeBron, over the next 30 games or so to close out the season, he's going on a tear, man. The last three games, he's been unguardable. I'm not saying the Heat are going to win 20-plus straight like they did last year. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if they rattled off 10 to 15 and it might be really seizing control of the East. What's your take?
I mean, their games are so much different. It's almost apple and oranges, where, like, Durant is just a pure scorer, can take anybody off the dribble. He's tall enough to go over anybody as far as taking jump shots. He doesn't miss jump shots. He's a 50% shooter. It's really apples and oranges, but, I mean, I agree with you. I think LeBron's going to go on a tear. I mean, Wade can't stay out. He can't stay on the floor. I always enjoyed the nickname Flashes instead of Flash, which is I really wish I would have thought of that. That's exactly what he is. I mean, Bosh is going to have to step up and be the number two guy. But, I mean, after Bosh, there's obviously a drop-off in the Heat team, and the fact that they're going to compete for a title really speaks volumes to LeBron. And I think it'd be dumb to keep playing him like they do. I really think they should sort of limit his minutes, just kind of settle into that second seed. They're not going to catch Indiana. I mean, let's be honest, they're not going to catch Indiana. No way, no how. I mean, they really should just settle in the second seed, play LeBron 32, 35 minutes instead of 38 to 40, and just settle in two seed and then just kind of unleash these guys in the second round.
So
that's why I think Durant's the clear-cut MVP. I don't think he's going to lose. Their games are apples and oranges.
So given that even though Russell Westbrook will be making a return sometime soon, you don't think that that'll – obviously, the obvious scenario is that his points will decrease, his shots. I mean, he takes an incredible volume of shots. We'll see that go down. I mean, he plays 38 minutes a game. Do you see a significant enough drop-off that maybe LeBron, given the fact that he seems to be on a mission, all the talk that he's been putting out there in the media, given what he said, given his last couple games, I mean, can you see LeBron maybe overtaking the MVP? You talk about overtaking the two seed. I kind of think they go – or the one seed, I kind of think they go hand in hand. If LeBron turns it on, makes it a run for the MVP, kind of feel like they're going to be in contention for that one seed. And other people say the one seed isn't important, but I'm not trying to play a game seven in Indianapolis. I'm not. You're not winning that game. Not a chance.
I agree when Westbrook comes back. But, I mean, Durant currently is averaging, looking at it right now, 31.5 points a game, and he's been on that tail the last couple months. But bringing a guy like Westbrook back, who's a top eight player, in my opinion, when he's healthy, I think most people would say top 12, but personally I think he's top eight. Bringing him back isn't really going to – I don't see that being a bad thing. Like, he's not going to play a ton of minutes right away. They're going to start easing back in the lineup, you know, let him get his legs under him. He had a knee injury. So, you know, he's get his conditioning back. Not that, you know, not that it's going to take long for that guy. But he – I don't really see it. I mean, the thing people need to remember about Westbrook is that he is not a crazy shoot-first, you know, point guard like he's kind of perceived to be. He generally leads the league in assists to – a player, which is Durant, which, you know, I almost think you or I could be in the top five, you know, when you're passing to a guy like Durant, but he's also third on that list for points to assist to another player, which is Serge Ibaka, who's not known as a scorer. The only player, the guy that's number two was Paul to Blake Griffin. And now this is over the last couple of years. This isn't, you know, this season, obviously, but he's a distributor. He's a pass first point guard and can get his own shot. And young Russell Westbrook would shoot them out of games. But that's not him anymore. His game sort of evolved. I mean, before his injury last year, you know, the guy never missed a game in his entire basketball playing career, high school, college, FIBA tournaments, Olympics, NBA, regular season and playoffs. That guy never missed a game. And a guy like that will just come in, and I don't see them missing a step. They've played together for so long, I don't see it.
I mean, I kind of feel like I would imagine there'd be some sort of chemistry issues, given the fact that Westbrook really hasn't played a ton this season. I mean, people harking back to that Grizzly series where he took about 209 shots a game and really, like you said, shot them out of the series. And I think that Russell Westbrook is long gone. I think he's kind of grown as the years have passed, and he's turned into, I wouldn't necessarily say he's a true point guard. He definitely likes to get his shots up. He's no Baron Davis, let's put it that way. And I think, like, you put him in a situation with a hot KD and Serge Ibaka, who's starting to play well, that team's going to get even deeper. And you want to talk about somebody out of the Western Conference, you know, you have to talk about Oklahoma City being a legit championship contender now.
Absolutely. And Russell Westbrook just solidifies that. They're first in the West. The West is clearly a superior division, and they're dominating it. I don't see a team in the West who are really giving them issues outside of San Antonio, just because San Antonio is San Antonio, and they always find ways. They just find these ways. So, I mean, it's really them, the Pacers, and the Heat in the finals, and they are 100% going to, and this is an obvious statement of the show, they're 100% going to need a healthy Russell Westbrook to win the title this year. So they have the luxury also of easing him back in. They don't need to play him. They lose a step when he was gone. So they can ease him back in, let him get his leg, like I said, and he'll be fine. I mean, they're going to win the title, in my opinion. If they don't, it's because Indiana played a crazy series, and I just gave away my pick of who I think is going to be in the finals, but I'm not – that's no secret. I'm not jumping out of the limb. Not on my Grizzlies kick of 2 years ago. It's pretty obvious
well
who
you.
Most people think. Listen, the year before I was making the Grizzlies proclamation, they took the – they almost made it to the Western Conference Finals that year. They were about 2 minutes away. So
every
no
time
one thought
they
should be there.
Every time they played, though, you would text me. I'm telling you, the Grizzlies, champions, and their feast, Zebo, Rudy Gay, all the other dudes they had. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm not seeing it. And then they fizzled out, and I didn't hear anything from you.
Well, listen, if that team had the Marc Gasol that is playing right now, No doubt we'd be having a different conversation.
No question about that. He's Bill Kegel. I'm Mike Pizeski. You're under the hoodies. FatSportsPage.com Radio Network, brought to you by Blog Talk Radio. We're talking a little KD, LeBron, and the rivalry continues. We're old enough to remember the Michael Jordan days and, you know, against Karl Malone and the Sonics and the Jazz and the Blazers and the Lakers. Oh, we remember all those series, Bill. I don't think this rivalry is quite there yet. It's definitely not to that level because neither player is Michael Jordan. Neither player probably is going to be Michael Jordan. In terms of rivalries, though, how close are they? How close are they to those Jordan rivalries? How close are they to like, say, Reggie Miller versus the Knicks? I mean, that's when basketball is basketball to me, and I'm not quite sure this is there yet.
It's not because they don't play each other enough. I think if they played, you know, if they're both in the Western, or excuse me, if they're both in the same conference, I think if they saw each other more, I think it would be. I think a lot of their rivalry is a media hype, which it is fun to compare those two guys. I mean, they're clearly 1A and 1B as far as the best players in the league, and it was super exciting when they went at each other a couple weeks ago. For that, I mean, that was some of the best basketball I've ever seen. That few minute stretch when they went at each other was just incredible basketball. But I don't think it's to that level that you're saying that you're comparing it to. That you said. I don't see it ever getting to that level just because they don't play each other enough. They play each other twice a year, and then they might meet in the finals, but it's unlikely. That kind of thing. I think it's all just media stuff.
Well, the media likes to kind of play things up, obviously. I mean, it gets people to read.
It does make it interesting
watch.
When they play. I mean, it's a good thing.
Well, it definitely is. I mean, I'm certainly interested. I watched every minute of the finals when they played a few years ago, and I'm not even a huge NBA guy. I like to talk about it. I don't necessarily like to watch it. I'll watch when LeBron plays. I'll watch when Kobe plays. I watched the dunk contest because there was nothing else on, and I didn't even sniff the All-Star game.
Yeah, the All-Star game is kind of useless outside of the last couple of minutes if it's close. That's when you'll see some really good basketball. But it's kind of a joke. I mean, Blake Griffin, you know, he got an alley-oop. But he does that in games when they play the Bucks. It wasn't, you know, they're boring. The only thing I find exciting about the NBA All-Star Weekend is I do enjoy the three-point contest because I think that's the only contest that they do that I could participate in and possibly do okay.
Well, I'm pretty sure you're not going to do any worse than Joe Johnson.
No, I think I would have got through all the racks. I mean, that's probably the only thing I would have done better than anybody that's ever stepped on an NBA floor, but I'm pretty sure I would have got through all the racks.
Bill Cosby could have shot the balls faster.
In a sweater.
We're eating pudding. Like, it's just, I don't understand. Like, you know your times. You have to get the shots up. I mean, there's no like, wiggle room. There's no extensions. You have, you know, you have 25 shots to get up in 60 seconds. Get the shots up.
It's like, why even enter it if you're just going to kind of lollygag through it? It just didn't make any sense. It was, I don't know. I'm not a Joe Johnson guy anyway, but.
I was going to say, doesn't that really kind of fit his personality, though? Like, he's never been one of the guys to be like, hey, I'm Joe Johnson. I'm going to get up in your grill and guard you. Hey, I'm Joe Johnson. I'm going to take over a game. He's just Joe Johnson. He's got an average name, and he's got an average game probably the last few years.
Yeah, he doesn't have an average contract, that's for sure. That's one of the worst contracts I've ever seen in my life. Cannot believe. That was highway robbery for the – did you know the deal on the Hawks with that? What they got from the Hawks, the Nets? The Nets got – then it's got Joe Johnson. I'm sorry, this is probably bad radio, but I'm going to look this Joe Johnson trade up because I remember laughing uncontrollably when I found out exactly what the Nets gave up to get Joe Johnson in that ridiculous contract. But yeah, he.
Well, considering he's never really been a go-to guy. I mean, he had to be the guy in Atlanta, but he's never that. Just because you have to be the guy doesn't mean you are the guy. It doesn't mean you can be the guy. It just means you're the guy that takes all the shots on a bad team.
Yeah. And, okay, as part of the Joe Johnson trade, the Knicks quietly agreed to swap picks with Brooklyn, first picks with Brooklyn in 2014 to 2015, which is kind of funny, given that the Nets, until like maybe a month ago, were looking to be a lottery team. So think about that. If the Nets didn't make the playoffs in almost any other year, they probably wouldn't. It's just the East is so terrible they're actually in the race. Those picks would be lottery picks. And they picked up that ridiculous contract. And I think that contract goes through 2017, I think. It's absurd.
Well,
it's an absurd contract.
Well, kind of that's a good segue into the trade deadline, and there have been a lot of rumors, you know, Pau Gasol, Jordan Hill talking about going to the Nets, them taking on more money. Doesn't look like that trade's going to happen, though, but I guess really Rajon Rondo and Pau Gasol are really the only two big names that could possibly be moved. You hear about Gasol to the Suns. You hear about Rondo to just about every team that needs a point guard. Are you a buyer of Pau Gasol? Because he's always had that soft label on him. He can definitely shoot the elbow jumper. He can get you some rebounds. But I don't know if he's that guy that can dominate the game in the post, and I'm not entirely sure I would want to trade players and picks for him, given the fact that he may not even sign with you next year. I just don't know if it's worth the risk.
Did you watch the gold medal game, the U.S.-Spain gold medal game from a couple of years ago?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Pau Gasol in that game was the best player on the floor. And he was absolutely 100% dominating in the post. Dominating. Like, Dwight Howard couldn't do anything on him. It's not that the U.S. had a lot of size anyway, but nobody could really guard him in the post. And it was kind of insane to watch him because then that same year, the Lakers get D'Antoni as their coach, and it's just like, I can't think of a coach on the planet that could be worse for Pau Gasol's game. Like, he's a post player. He's not a good defender, obviously, but that guy, incredible in the post, and I do think he still has value. Like, he's older by basketball standards, but he's not had a real injury history. Not a crazy one, not what Derrick Rose is putting up right now, but I don't know. I still think he has value.
Well, that's the one thing that Pau Gasol and I do have in common, issues with the plantar fasciitis. He's far, far more athletic than I'll ever dream of being. So he was able to recover. I'm still fat, out of shape, and lazy. But I just don't know if it's worth it, given the fact that he's going to be a free agent and you're going to have to sign him. I mean, if you're the Suns and you have, I think they have 6 draft picks and they got all these young guys, and the Lakers, they can offer cap relief. I mean, that's great, but I'm not a big believer in trading for a guy that you're not going to have. And the Suns aren't winning a championship this year. They're not winning a championship next year. So I don't even know if it's worth the risk. Why not hold on to those picks, package multiple picks, and maybe get a younger guy who you have some control over instead of an aging veteran who, like you said, hasn't had serious injury issues, but on the downside of his career, you can certainly see that being a possibility.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let me recant. It was Tyson Chandler, not Dwight Howard, so I apologize. I forgot Dwight Howard didn't play in that Olympics. I think he was hurt. But I agree with you, but he's also an aspiring contract. I mean, it's kind of nice. I don't know. Depends on what you're very obvious. It depends on what you're trading for. I mean, if you're getting rid of contracts that you don't like to get Pau Gasol to clear some cap space, that's kind of nice, but I don't know. I do think he has value. I do think if you're in a nice, you're kind of in a market that he likes, he could convince him to stay. It's going to be tough. He's going to want to try to make max as much money as he can, but I don't know. I agree with you. I don't know if it's necessarily the right move for most teams.
Well, if you're the Lakers, you have to get rid of him. I mean, you can't just let him walk for free at the end of the year. You got to get something for him, even if it's, I know they're not, like, in love with the idea of salary cap relief, but if you're rebuilding, which they are, and they're going to get a lottery pick, and they're going to get a very high lottery pick, you're rebuilding, he's probably the best asset that you're willing to trade at this point. Why not trade him for what you can get and then just kind of cut your losses and move on? You're going to lose a ton of games anyway. Why not? I'm not saying tank. I'm not a big believer in tanking. I don't think teams, coaches, organizations tank. But by getting rid of Gasol, you definitely help your chances of getting a top 3 pick and getting one of the many top collegiate players that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes.
I agree with that. I think that their best move would be to move him. I mean, at least try to get something for him when he ultimately leaves, because he doesn't want to stay. I don't know if he's ever come out publicly and said this. I doubt it. I doubt any athlete would, but he doesn't want to play for Mike D'Antoni. He's catching the ball 20 feet from the basket. Yeah. Other than Jeremy Lin and Steve Nash 10 years ago, I don't think anybody does.
Steve Nash can't get on the court right now. I mean,
well, I just ran it up like 10 years ago, not for Steve Nash.
No, it's sad, though, isn't it, about Steve Nash? Not to get off tangent here, but it's kind of sad. We grew up watching him, too. I remember him in Santa Clara against Arizona in the NCAA tournament, knocking them off, watching that at, like, 12:30 a.m. and hoping my mom didn't catch me. But I just remember that guy. So much of his game is just running around like a maniac, and, you know, he can't do that right now. And he's getting old, and we're getting old, Bill.
Yeah, well, it's a combination of both, I think. He doesn't have much lift off his legs anymore. I mean, he can't even – what he was always kind of underrated at was he was a pretty good jump shooter for the most part. And, I mean, he can't get his legs under him. He obviously can't get to the basket. He doesn't have any speed. He just keeps getting checks. So, I mean, he's doing something right, or he did something right at least to convince L.A. to take a flyer on him, but – yeah, it is sad to see kind of what he is now. I don't know if there's anything worse than a shell of yourself, but he's that. He'll be. I do wonder where he ends up. I know we're getting on a Steve Nash tangent right now. Do you think he'll be a coach? Do you think he'll be a front office guy? What do you think his career? Or just does he try out for a semi-pro soccer team?
Well, if you can't run around the court, I'm not sure how you run around the pitch, as they call it. But, I mean, he's definitely a cerebral player, and he certainly understands the game. He's been an elite point guard for several seasons. I mean, if Jason Kidd can be a coach, Steve Nash can be a coach. I guess that's the bottom line,
right?
Well,
Jason Kidd should be a coach. I would like to think that everybody in the NBA learned a lesson from Jason Kidd, and that is why. You know, the guy had no coaching experience whatsoever. He's not a guy like Brian Shaw who sat behind the bench, learned from these other coaches that have been doing it a long time. He just went right into it. I don't think anyone will – I would like to think no one will make that mistake again.
You would hope not. We're Mike Szczesny, Bill Kegel, Under the Hoodies, Episode 3 on BackSportsPageRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Networks. Staying with the trade deadline, Bill, point guards, Rajon Rondo. He's a Celtics best asset. What do you do? I mean, personally, I think they should keep him. I don't know why you wouldn't keep him. Point guards don't grow on trees. They're like quarterbacks. The Knicks would do anything to get rid of Ray Felton. They can't. Nobody wants him. Why wouldn't you keep your best player? You already have a ton of draft picks. You already have a ton of cap room. Why not just keep him?
I think they should. I really think they should, man. That guy's a gamer. He wants to win. He makes everybody better. I mean, and the best thing that could have happened to the Celtics is that he got injured. They can get less. They can charge him. I mean, they can offer him less money. And you know, who else is going to pay a guy coming off that knee injury, especially with seeing what happened with Derrick Rose and these residual injuries from previous injuries like Westbrook. No one's going to want to pay him. Like, he's not going to get a max deal. So they're going to get him semi-cheap. I definitely think that that they should keep him. And he's still a player to build around. He's super young, too. He's only 28? So
he's not old at all. But I guess they don't have a ton of cap room next year. Most of their cap room is in 2015 when you really kind of look for them to really make a move. But it's a tough spot for Danny Ainge to – I feel like if you trade Rajon Rondo, that sets you back a couple more years. If you keep him, he's young enough. You got to get some shooters to surround him. I think that's the best way to do it. Get some young guys, get some athletic wings, and just let him create and kind of be Steve Nash, where he can just run around, find shooters. And in reality, that's what he did – that's what he did with KG and Pierce and Allen and those guys. Run the high screen, roll around, hit Ray Allen, hit KG for the elbow jumper. I'm not saying build that exact team, but they can certainly kind of utilize that mold and learn from their past teams and surround them with guys that can help them win. I don't know if trading him is the answer.
No, I agree with you. And they got him kind of on a steal when they signed him a few years ago. I think they signed him four years, $45 million, and he signed for the next 2 years, 11.9 this year, to 12.9 next year. So I mean, for a guy of his caliber, he's pretty inexpensive. I just looked up. He's only 27. He'll turn 28 in a couple days. So I 100% think you keep him. Do you remember the series where LeBron, I think it was game six of their first title season, where LeBron went crazy? You just had that look in his eye. He just took the game over, put the Heat even with Boston. Everyone forgets Rondo in that game. Rondo was making jump shots. He had like 45 points. He had a triple double. I forget his assist and rebounds, but I know he had 40 plus points. When he's on, he's one of the five best players getting to the basket, getting his own shot, creating things, and helping his team win while doing it. I don't think that kind of talent comes along often. I can't stress enough. I think it'd be silly to get rid of him.
He's Bill Kegel. I'm Mike Pazeski. You're Under the Hoodies. BackSportsPage.com, BlogTalkRadio.com. Switching gears now, we're going to talk about the NBA draft, and the Celtics have a ton of picks. The Suns have a ton of picks. We agree on a lot. I've noticed that. We don't really disagree on a lot, but I think this is one of the items that we are going to disagree on. You made the comment today on Facebook that you liked Julius Randle out of Kentucky as the top prospect coming out of the draft. And you also like Joel Embiid, the big man out of Kansas. I kind of have to disagree with you. I'm going to let you kind of defend your guys first. Sell me on Julius Randle and sell me on Joel Embiid. And don't give me the obvious. Don't tell me that Julius Randle is, you know, he's raw, he's long, he's athletic, and so is everybody else in the draft. And then you know, they're drafting on potential. I want you to give me something other than the obvious as to why Julius Randle is going to be the top prospect. Not just the top pick, but why he is the top prospect in the 2014 draft.
It's very rare to find a guy that's 6'9" that can handle the ball, that has a mid-range jump shot and a developing three-pointer. He has a semi-elite skill, which is if he goes straight to the basket with no moves, he just straight, just 100%, just with no, like, you know, a lot of guys like head fake. If he just goes straight to the hoop, he's almost unguardable. And he's long. Obvious. I mean, you just told me not to say this, but he's long. He's athletic. I don't think he's quite. I mean, he is raw, but he's not quite as raw as some of the other, you know, talents that we've seen. But it's just rare to find a guy that can play power forward and handle the ball. That's why I'm such a big DeMarcus Cousins fan. Not that he's a DeMarcus Cousins. He doesn't have a DeMarcus Cousins body, but I mean, just 6'9" power forwards that can shoot. Kevin Love comes to mind. Karl Malone was a good mid-range jump shooter. Go ahead.
Here's the thing. He's not big enough to be a four in the NBA, okay? I don't know if he can rebound like Kevin Love. I don't know if he can shoot like Karl Malone. I mean, that's yet to be seen. To me, if you're a tweener in terms of size, at the NBA level, you kind of get swallowed up, man. You just do. There's no position for you. And if you don't excel at one thing, I'm not entirely sure that you're going to succeed. Yeah, you'll get rich off that first contract. And I talked about this last week. You're not going to get wealthy off the second contract. And that's what a lot of these kids don't understand. And I know this will never happen. He would be best served to stay in college for another year, get a little bit bigger, develop an outside shot. And I feel like we say that about every prospect. We said it about Michael Carter-Williams last year. We said Nerlens Noel needed to shoot the ball more. It's just the way it is. These kids come out
too early.
Well,
didn't work out for Marcus Smart.
Well, see, here's the thing. I'm going to defend Marcus Smart because I think he is physical enough. I think he can shoot. He can handle the rock. He's a beast. Now his attitude maybe has kind of turned some GMs sour maybe in the last couple weeks. But don't you think he's a bigger D Wade? And I'm not saying his game is like, oh, he's D Wade. He's the next Flash, as you said earlier. But he's a 6'4" combo guard, man. 6'4" combo guards are hard to find, and he would have been the number one pick last year. I find it hard to believe that pushing a fat fan at Texas Tech is going to really make him drop that far down the draft board.
Oh, dude, no. Listen, if you can play, teams will take a flyer on you. I think we discussed that. I think we kind of touched on that last week. If you can play, I don't think anyone's going to be thinking about that come June. I think worst-case scenario, he's somebody thinks of him as a kind of a,
a nicer Kyle Lowry who has the image of being kind of an a-hole around the locker room and around younger players trying to take his spotlight. But I don't think that. I think most people took it as him being hyper competitive.
I don't know. I guess he's not. In the NBA, Marcus Smart, you guys talked about tweeners. He's not. He's 6'4". That's not big. It's not small. But he's thick. You know what I mean? He can create his own shots. And unlike Julius Randle, who just goes in a straight line, that's not going to work in the NBA. Marcus Smart can get around people. He can wiggle through screens. He can, you know, split the double team. He can do all
that
stuff.
That's what Randle can do. Randle can handle for a 6'9". So if he's kind of on the wing, he can sort of get his own shot. I mean, he'll learn that. I think that he'll learn to use his size. If he's a big small forward, or he's a big three, all right, and he's being guarded by a guy, you know, I'm trying to think of a player that would be a good. Say if he's guarded by a guy like, I don't know, maybe we'll say like a Rudy Gay. Yeah. If he's being guarded by Rudy Gay, then he, you know, he'll rise over that guy. I mean, he'll rise over Rudy Gay. I mean, he just, you know, jump shooters at that size they don't grow on trees.
No, they definitely don't. And I don't know. I mean, money doesn't grow on tree either, but he certainly passed up a healthy chunk of it last year by not coming out. Like I said, could have been the number one pick. But a guy that could be the number one pick, he's getting a lot of hype, if not for a recent injury, is another one of your dudes, is Joel Embiid, the big 7-footer out of Kansas. I mean, he's a huge physical specimen with all the tools to be a star. The problem is he's just reaching his potential. You don't know what he has. He's had some good games. He's had some really bad games. He's obviously been hurt this year. He's not overly aggressive on the offensive end. He's not overly aggressive on the defensive end. To me, he's a bigger Nerlens Noel, and I don't know if that's a guy you want to take at the top. I mean, we've seen Anthony Davis go at the top of the draft. We've seen Noel, I think he fell to 6 last year when everybody thought he was going to go number one. Because are pencil-thin centers the new trend? Because I'm not seeing it. What I'm seeing is LeBron James. What I'm seeing is Kevin Durant and to a lesser extent Carmelo Anthony, because I do think you can win with him, but you need scorers. You need dudes that can put the ball in the hoop. Even the Spurs have that. You know, they have Tony Parker, Ginobili, Duncan, Kawhi Leonard. They just have guys that can score, and I'm just not sure that falling in love with an 18-year-old pencil-thin center is just the way to go. I don't know if that's how you build a team, but what do I know? I'm not an NBA GM.
I think the problem with him is that he is really, I mean, he's thin. He's 250, but 7 foot. I mean, that's thin. He'll be okay. Isn't that okay? I mean, like, his body will get bigger. He'll be on an NBA conditioning program. He just has incredible footwork. He's just incredible, and he's been playing basketball for only a couple of years now. I mean, just scratching the surface of what he can be. He'll be, and I don't want to say in the proper hands, because in the proper hands, you and I would be better players. But once he gets to the NBA, I mean, he has the footwork down, which is a lot of these tall, thin guys struggle with at first, is their footwork. And they constantly, you know, they're constantly working at it throughout their career. The comparison I heard today, actually, by Chad Ford of ESPN, he compared it to Hakeem Olajuwon. Now, I don't know if there's even going to be I don't think that's a fair comparison to him. I think that's a way too high of a ceiling, because Hakeem Olajuwon, there's only one, and there will only ever be one. But it's an interesting comparison, you know, considering his body type, you know, the way he moves, his footwork, just a lot of what you can see.
You're listening to Under the Hoodies, Episode 3 on blogtalkradio.com, courtesy of the Back Sports Page Radio Network. We're talking a little bit of NBA Draft 2014, talking about some of Bill's favorite guys, talking about some of my favorite guys, really focusing on the top five here. And a guy that has really, in my opinion, kind of raised his stock and elevated his worth exponentially is Jabari Parker from Duke. The 6'8 swingman, I often compared to Pierce Mello. He's obviously not as big as them. He's obviously not as thick. And quite honestly, neither were those guys when they came out. But he's silky smooth. He's athletic. He's ferocious at the hoop. He can finish. And that's what you want. And he's not a polished player by any stretch. But if there's a guy that I would probably take number one, and if it wasn't, if you told me I couldn't take Marcus Smart, it would have to be Jabari Parker. He can handle the ball. He can play the point forward. He's not LeBron, but we've seen LeBron be successful in that role. He's really consistent. For an outside shooter, he's really consistent. You can't beat that, because we talk about all these guys that come out and they can't shoot. The Michael Carter Williams and the Nerlens Noel. Those guys can't shoot, and they're not expected to. Jabari Parker is going to be expected to shoot the ball when he comes in, and I think there's a chance that he will be the number one pick if he comes out, and there's not a guy playing better in the country right now, and Duke's got a pretty interesting week this week, capped off by facing number one Syracuse this Saturday. Billy, it's still with me. I know you were having some technical difficulties. Bill is not with me. Hopefully he's good old Bill. Never leaves me in doubt, always leaving me hanging. But Jabari Parker, one of those guys that I don't know if you can build your team around him. I don't know if he's LeBron James. I don't know if he's Kevin Durant. What he is a freakishly athletic three guy, and you can't beat freakishly athletic three guys at all. There's not a chance in the world. So if you have the chance to take him number one, you have to. Another guy that you could argue might be, and nobody's even talked about him, and it's sad, is Doug McDermott out of Creighton. Here's the guy that's been in college for 4 years at Creighton, and he's really done everything you've asked. He's gotten better, and I love how he's only, and I don't mean to get this on an unnecessary tangent, but he's always compared to, white guys. Like Matt Harpering and Jeff Hornacek, guys like that. And it's unfortunate. It really is. He's a guy that can shoot the rock. He can get to the tin. He can rebound. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where you have to just wonder if being the color that he is, if that's gonna hurt his cause. You know, and listen, we pulled no punches last week. But we don't pull punches on the show. That's what we do. We say things that other people are afraid to say. He's a natural scorer. He's not going to beat you with speed, but he can get those angles. He's a smart, heady player. Certainly could see him fitting maybe later in the first round, maybe to a team like the San Antonio Spurs, maybe to a team like the Pacers. One of those guys who's a smart player. He's going to fill the bucket. And NBA, you need shooters. You have to have shooters in the league, don't you? I mean, wouldn't LeBron kill for another shooter right now? Wouldn't he kill for Ray Allen right now? I'm sure he would. I'm sure he would tell you right now.